Welcome to Yarns at Yin Hu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 343, Reviving My Oldest Whip. Sunday, March 16th, 2025. I'm your host, Sarah. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. Each time I record an episode, I post show notes, photographs, and links to things I talk about on my website, yarnsatyinhu.com. In today's episode, I cover upcoming news and events, projects I'm working on, some baking that I've been doing, as well as a poem for the season. I want to give a very special thank you to all of my supporters on Ko-fi, whether you are a monthly contributor or a one-time contributor. Your contributions really make a difference, and your notes and your kindness are very much appreciated. Each quarter, I offer up a special prize as a thank you to those folks who make contributions on Ko-fi, and I will be announcing the quarter one winner in the next episode of the Yarns at Yin Hu podcast. To be eligible for this drawing, all you need to do is become a monthly contributor or make a one-time contribution sometime on or before March 21st. The quarter one prize is a really special one. It is a $60 gift certificate to Knit Spin Farm, and you could use it to buy any of Joanna's wonderful self-striping colorways. You've heard me talk about them here on the podcast. She also makes really beautiful bats and spinning fibers. She has a quirky sense of humor and a real attachment to the land and her farm that comes through in all of her products. So I offer up this very, very special prize and encourage you to make a contribution and get in the running for it. Coming up in April is the Hudson Valley Textile Project Annual Summit. I have been so fortunate to attend this summit in the past, and the one coming up on April 9th is going to be incredibly special because it features Isabella Rossellini as a guest speaker. And really, my experience is that each one of these summits becomes more involved and more exciting than the last because the interests and the work of the Hudson Valley Textile Project continues to grow. I just received a notice, an email notification, that there are very few seats remaining for this summit. So if you were thinking of going, you really need to waste no time in getting registered for the event. I have registered for this event and I'm planning to go this year in somewhat of a different capacity. I have accepted a role on the Hudson Valley Textile Project's Advisory Council and hope to continue my ongoing support of the people and the objectives of this mission in a little bit more of an expanded role. It's a very exciting new adventure, and in my April episode, I hope to share a little bit more about that role and also some of the highlights from the summit. In December, I cast on a scarf project called The Clincher by Ash Kearns. This is the third version of The Clincher that I've knit. And it was kind of a take along with me project, purse project, for much of the winter, and I finally completed this knit. I used Distelfink fiber in the Grasshopper colorway. This is Megan's beautifully hand-dyed yarn. Grasshopper is a lovely tonal green, And because of the way the clincher pattern is written, it allows you to really use every last bit of a skein of yarn. So I worked all of that gorgeous yarn into this corrugated rib scarf pattern. It's kind of a pennant-shaped scarf. It begins with just a few stitches and then gradually expands along one side. And then at the very end, either in the same color or preferably some sort of a contrast color, you knit up a whole bunch of loops at the end using I-cord. And so I wanted something with a high contrast, and I chose some leftover yarn I had from Carol of Foster Sheep Farms. It's some of her beautiful madder dyed fingering weight yarn, which was a wonderful match with the green of the grasshopper green. And I completed all of those loops, and the project is done. So I'm setting it aside. This isn't something that I really wanted for myself. It was more to have something to knit on and to maybe start stockpiling a little bit of a gift stash. After completing that project, I did make another cast on, which I'll tell you about in a little bit, but it's not the kind of thing that I would take around with me or tuck into my purse to knit on. So I was thinking about other accessory projects, even thinking about casting on another clincher scarf, when I remembered that in going through all of my stash and my belongings in my crafting space, I had unearthed a work in progress that I didn't exactly forget about it, but it has been hibernating for a very, very long time. Maybe more than 10 years. I'm not quite sure. This pattern is the Inspira cowl. When I started knitting around 2013 or so, Noro yarn was all the rage, and I began this project with Noro sock yarn, which is a singles yarn. It's self-striping, it's like long color repeats, often kind of shocking combinations of colors. And this particular Inspira cowl is a corrugated rib pattern. So you're alternating purl and knit stitches, and you're alternating with two skeins of yarn in different colorways. It's a very exciting looking cowl, super colorful. I remember that in looking at Ravelry, all of the finished projects were really drawing me in. And I cast this on and knit about, 6 or 7 inches of this cowl and set it aside in a project bag. It was like one of the first project bags that I ever made. And there it has been ever since. So I started thinking, instead of casting on something new as a little travel or take along project, why not really keep working on this and finish it? And so I took it out and sort of thought through the design of it and what I was doing. And then I did discover, folded up really small in the bottom of the bag, the directions for the cowl and the name of it, because at that point I couldn't even remember it. And then it dawned on me why I had tucked that project away. And that's because Noro sock yarn, being a singles, is overspun, and it's really difficult to manage these two strands of yarn. They keep wanting to tangle. It's kind of a battle to work with it. And then that battle was made even more difficult by the fact that the circular needles I was using have like a, I don't know if it's like a brass coating or some kind of metal coating that was really corroded. It was so corroded that my yarn was sticking on it when I tried to advance it along the needles. So I used some copper cleaner and cleaned off those needles. I polished them up so that the yarn moves a little more nicely along the needles. Then I got my yarn sorted and I've done a few more rounds on this cowl. And I think I'm making peace with it. I really enjoy the color play. I really like working on something that I started as, you know, such an early knitter that I was really excited about. And the corrugated rib is very pleasing. So right now, that's my take-along project, and I'll see how I go. Not only do I have, I must have been very ambitious, because not only do I have two skeins of yarn for the project, but I tucked some other partially used skeins of Noro into that bag. Like, I might use those as well. Once again, that's the Inspira cowl, and since I began knitting this project, the page for this cowl and the way to access the directions for it have changed quite a bit. So I have linked it in my Ravelry page. I don't know why, but I couldn't find an entry for this project for when I started it. So I started a page for it now and took a photograph of the status of the project right at this moment. And hopefully I'll continue working on that and have, you know, a very colorful finished object sometime in the future. New on the needles is the Pressed Flowers Shawl by Amy Christophers. This has long taken up some space in my imagination. And for my birthday in May, I was gifted 3 skeins of Making Tracks Light from the Junction Fiber Mill in the Aurora Borealis colorway. This is a very special, very generous gift from Jessica, my sister. And when I received it, I had it in mind that those skeins might look really nice knit into this pressed flowers shawl. Recently, I've been making more garments than accessories, and shawls in particular, which were once so much of my knitting content, have really fallen by the wayside. I really haven't looked at shawl patterns too much or been super excited about knitting shawls, but this is the one that kept coming back. Like, I would really like to knit that pressed flowers shawl. Of course, my friend Mary Beth has an amazing example, which I've not only admired, but I've worn and I've snuggled under when I visited her at her home. And she has kept telling me, yes, yes, you must knit a pressed flowers shawl. So I was thinking about what yarn to use as the main color, and I wanted something very, very plain and very, very warm. The nature of this shawl is that it's very, very deep for its width. I've been used to knitting shawls that have like a very long wingspan, which makes sense for me because I'm tall and my arms are very long, and they don't have quite as much depth. But this shawl is deep, and I think the appeal of that is that it can kind of serve as like a little bit of a lap blanket or maybe a shawl to wrap around you when you're in bed or just sitting and reading and the house is cool, you're not moving around a lot. it's, for me, I think it's less a shawl to be wearing out as an accessory. And so for that reason, I wanted something really, really warm. And the Making Tracks certainly is 100% wool, which is great. So for the main color, I chose Stone Soup Worsted Yarn from Bare Naked Wools, which is a blend of a lot of different sheep breed yarn. And it's spun up in quite a rustic style. It's woolen spun. It has a lot of loft. And to me, I think it will be very, very warm. And so far, I have really enjoyed the knitting of this pressed flowers shawl. There are charts, there's a lot of thinking, it's mosaic knitting, and all of that was like a challenge and a little bit brain bending as I got started, but now I'm into the rhythm of it and I'm able to knit without looking so much at the charts and the pattern. I can read my knitting and have an idea of where things are going. And I can focus on the way that the Making Tracks is changing colors from some beautiful crimson reds to greens. And now I think we're moving into some beautiful blue colors. And I think that this will be, I guess, moderately slow going. I'm knitting this shawl on US 7 needles, which I think is a little bit larger than what's called for in the pattern, but I think the pattern is for DK weight. And I'm treating this as a worsted weight shawl. So worsted weight, US size 7 needles, Making Tracks light, and Bare Naked Wools Stone Soup Worsted for Amy Christopher's pressed flowers shawl. I'm continuing with the decorative stitching on an Alabama Channon bolero. I used a beautiful fern pattern to stencil the pieces of this garment, and now I'm working on the stitching. I'm using some teal colored button thread as well as really beautiful silver beads. And so far I have stitched both sleeves of this bolero and I'm nearly finished with one of the front panels. So I still have the other front panel and the back of the bolero to go. And I'm working to get the decorative elements of this bolero complete in March so that during the month of April, I can work on stitching together and binding not just the bolero, but also a maxi length dress that I've cut to go with this bolero into a kind of outfit. I did not do stenciling on the maxi dress. I kind of kept it all to the bolero. I could alter that in the future. I could always add a bit of stenciling and do some decorative stitching on that as well. But for now, I think I'm going to keep it plain. And the challenge element for me with this outfit will be that I will be hand sewing all of the garment. In the past, I've just done hand sewing for the decorative pieces and I've used my machine to stitch the garment together. That has worked fine and certainly I've worn my Alabama Channon pieces quite a bit, but there is often some puckering and then it's really almost impossible to unpick something that I've stitched with a stretch stitch on my machine and redo it if I encounter puckering or if things don't line up quickly. It just goes really quick when I'm working with the machine. And I think I would like to experiment with the control that the hand stitching of these knit garments makes possible. So the current plan, this is a 100-day project, and 100 days will extend out past May since I began in February. However, I still do have the plan of completing that decoration in March and doing the garment construction in April. And that's because I would like to wear this outfit in May. I am working toward a fiber arts show at the Orange Gallery once again for May. It will be the second annual. And since I've had this project going for so long, I cut it out, I think, 2 summers ago, I really want to give myself a deadline to complete and wear the outfit. That's usually a motivating factor for me that works. And so I think this is a good plan to keep consistency. In terms of posting images of this project, I am using Blue Sky exclusively to post my progress on this particular project. Lots of folks are moving away from Instagram, and certainly the algorithms are very disappointing. And so I have opened a Blue Sky account. You can find me as Sarah Pomegranate on Blue Sky. If you follow me, I'll follow you back, as long as I can tell that you are some kind of knitter or interested in the fiber arts. When I look at your profile, I will certainly follow you back. But, you know, it's bittersweet because I've worked a long time on my account on Instagram. I love my followers there. I like the interaction that I've had so far with listeners and with other crafters. I've enjoyed putting together reels. And recently, I'm reaching about 3,000 followers, which is kind of a milestone for me. So far, I'm not giving up on Instagram, but I'm trying to start a following on Blue Sky with this particular project of my 100 days of Alabama Channon stitching. So I hope to see you there if you're on Blue Sky. In the wind-up to St. Patrick's Day, I've been doing a bit of baking, and I've developed a new item on offer at Orange Coffee Art Music, which is a shamrock tart. For this, I've made my first pâte sucrée, which is a sweet pastry dough. I adore working with this dough and wish I had known about it sooner. It comes together beautifully, it rolls out very nicely, and it's the perfect foundation for a filling that has some mint and lime. So that's on offer all this weekend and probably through the end of March. And at home, I've been baking some Irish soda bread. I really love a soda bread, and in particular, I like to bake mine with golden raisins and caraway seeds. I was excited to find some rather local buttermilk from a farm in New York State, so I've been using that, and I pulled up Sally's Baking Addiction recipe for Irish soda bread, and it turned out really well. I split the recipe into 2 smaller loaves, which I like to do. I like to have the smaller loaves rather than 1 big loaf. And we've just been enjoying it with some really high quality butter, orange marmalade, and this morning I used it to make French toast, which was absolutely delicious. So I can definitely recommend the Sally's Baking Addiction recipe for Irish soda bread. I'll close today with a poem in my off-the-shelf segment, but before I do that, I would just like to give a suggestion for podcast listening. This is a podcast that I just found out about because I learned that an artist I admire very much, Bisa Butler, was interviewed on this podcast. Bisa Butler is a quilting artist. Most of the subjects of her pieces are African American people, both well known as well as unknown. Usually they're portraits of single individuals, but sometimes it's a group. Her quilting techniques are extraordinary in that they're both intricate and they involve really kind of over-the-top saturated use of colors and textiles. I follow Bisa Butler on Instagram, and she made mention in a post recently that she was going to be interviewed on a podcast called The Optimist Project, which I had never heard of and of which I've since become a fan. The Optimist Project is hosted by Yara Shahidi. She takes as her objective the notion of really delving into optimism, which she says goes way beyond joy and happiness. Optimism is where the magic happens. Join us as we find ways to cultivate the practice of optimism in our own lives. And the episode featuring Bisa Butler is titled Bisa Butler, Threads of Optimism in Using Art, Teaching, and Legacy. It's nearly an hour long. I found the episode fascinating and learned a lot about Bisa Butler's early life. She talks a great deal about teaching because one of her parents was an educator and she was long an educator herself. And some of the schools she talked about were the very schools I worked in as a member of the National Writing Project when I was an English teacher in the public schools and working with all kinds of teachers in schools throughout New Jersey. So a lot of the same things she said hit very close to home. As someone who's very interested in the textile arts, I would have enjoyed yet another hour in which Bisa Butler talked more specifically about her techniques in creating the quilts. This interview has a much broader perspective about inspiration, motivation. She has some really interesting things to say about legacy and about determination and persistence. So I can highly recommend not only this particular episode featuring Bisa Butler, but also other episodes that the host, Yara Shahidi, presents, because she has great questions. She really is respectful of her guests while at the same time working to challenge them intellectually and challenge their memory of the past into some of these deeper considerations regarding optimism. So once again, that's Yara Shahidi, The Optimist Project. I listen to this via Apple Podcasts because that's how I get my podcasts. But my guess is that you could find these episodes on a lot of different podcatchers. Off the shelf, I'm going to share a new to me poem by a poet whose work I have just discovered in looking at poets.org this morning and looking for maybe a poem featuring spring, warming weather. So this poem is by Margaret Ray. It's a relatively new poem. It's part of a collection that came out just in 2023. And it's titled Garden State. Margaret Ray grew up in Gainesville, Florida, but clearly she has spent some time in New Jersey. I'm guessing in particular the area around Rutgers University, because some of the things she mentions in this poem are distinct features of the New Brunswick campus at Rutgers. And she uses a term that is new to me, post-lapsarian. Post-lapsarian has a definition of occurring or existing after the fall of man. So here's Garden State by Margaret Ray. The world smells green and wet, and today I am in a post-lapsarian good mood as I meander by the Raritan Canal, no longer moving in a deadly torpor like a winter fly, but thinking once again, the warming weather, about sex in a good way, how all those smells you're supposed to be ashamed of or wash away smell good once you know a thing or two. And finally, it's humid enough this second day after the rains. It is spring in New Jersey. I itch my eyes freely and blink down on gnats that seem determined to die in my field of so close I can't see them. And people are out. Look at their beautiful bodies, so many ankles and knees, clicking whiz of bike wheels, car exhaust hanging in the thick air, helmets pressing sweaty hair to sticky foreheads, a racket of motors on the other side of these trees. Early evening. The light just now is furtive, holy. This is no prologue, but the thing itself, the mud and the grease and the grass and the wet asphalt on one of those steaming, streaming, sunlit evenings after a week of rain that brought out the frogs to cover the road up the hill. There they were. No one knew where they were going. Thanks for listening. I hope you find some time this week for the crafting that you enjoy and that it brings you some solace and some comfort during difficult times. Take care.